TCA episode 1332 coming to you from our studio in beautiful Bytown, Canada. My name is Matt Robinson. Thank you so much for joining us again here today. Make sure you're following along on social media at Talkian Audio. We'd love to hear from you guys there on what you think about everything we're talking about here. Love the feedback, so keep that coming. As we mentioned yesterday on the show, that was episode 1331. AJ Jakubek was in here. We were going to talk Copa America. We were going to talk about the Canadian men's national team. We were going to talk about his trip to the Olympics. And then we were going to get to the CFL and the Ottawa Red Blacks. And, well, didn't quite pan out that way, as is often the case, AJ, when you and I get in here shooting the shit. It drags on a little bit. I got lots of questions. You got lots to say. So I appreciate you being willing to come back here and do this. If the good listener hasn't had a chance to catch that other conversation, like I said, that's 1331. It's available now at tallcanaudio.com or wherever you're hearing this one. But it is week two in the CFL. It is week one for the Ottawa Red Blacks as they had the bye week in week one. I've talked a little bit about finding that frustrating. The rest of the league's getting all excited and having opening night, and every other fan base got to kind of go through this a week ago where Ottawa had to wait a week. Does it bug you like it bugs me? You've been doing this a while. Do you just kind of roll with it now? Where are you at with it?
Schedule is the schedule.
Yeah.
I'd rather they play in week one, but
yeah,
that's, you get three. If you only had one bye week, it'd be different. You get three of them. So you get three bye weeks. You figure it out. You're going to get one early. You're going to get one in the summer, and then you're going to get one in the fall. So it's the way she goes. It's, you know, listening to Sean Burke on with JR and Steve.
Yep.
After cutdown day. You hear about, because it's not even something that I really think about, but you think when you hear him speak about just the logistics of getting guys places, getting guys visas,
sure,
all that type of stuff. I don't think it's the worst thing in the world.
Get everybody settled, get everybody comfortable.
Yeah, no, everyone's got to deal with it, so I get it.
Yeah,
but it's well, not the worst thing in the world.
Well, so the Red Blacks are the only team left at 0-0. Everybody else has got a game under their belt. I'm kind of curious, as you watched this offseason play out, how you thought this went. And let's start with probably the biggest position on the team, and that's the quarterback position. And I'll be honest with you, and I'll be curious to get you to, and I know you won't be shy about it if you disagree, but to push back, if they believed that Drew Brown was the best guy available, and there was a lot of talk that that was the case. He was a backup. He's ready to take the next step. He's maybe the next big quarterback in the CFL. I was pretty happy to see that not only did they target him, they didn't wait around. Don't risk it in free agency. Make a deal, acquire his rights, talk to him, and get it done. I was happy to see, just from a fan's perspective, that they were aggressive in acknowledging that this is a need and just go out and get it done. Do you think that was the right play to just step up, make the deal, and lock it in? Or was that maybe irrelevant? They were going to get it done in free agency anyway.
He was always, for me, the one that I wanted to see as a Red Black.
Mm-hmm.
Having, well, 2 years ago, I saw him lead the Bombers on a game-winning drive when Zach Kolaros got knocked out of the game, and he just seamlessly came in and boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
And then watching him last year, because he got more opportunities, and seeing him throw 9 touchdowns and no interceptions and win a couple of starts and throw a bunch of touchdowns against Edmonton and a comeback win, it led me to believe that, like, because I get it. There's probably a little bit of nervousness having watched Nick Arbuckle be that. And it's not just Arbuckle, but like James Franklin was the guy.
Yeah.
And then he got traded to Toronto and never really established himself as a starter. And Nick Arbuckle was the guy, kind of the best backup in the league.
Yeah, we've seen this movie before, right?
We have.
Yeah.
So it doesn't always work out. Best backup in the league.
Yep.
And that's both with situations involving Ottawa and situations that haven't involved Ottawa. But I really liked what I saw from Drew Brown. And I liked what I heard about Drew Brown. So the other thing is, I just feel like they're deeper.
in that position.
Like with Dustin Crum backing up, and I think he's taken a step this year watching him in preseason.
He went to the school of hard knocks last year, right? Yeah. He learned some things that he wasn't expecting to.
He was supposed to be number four, and now he's number two.
Yeah.
And you still have Masoli and Adams, who I don't know their timeline in terms of injuries, but...
Are you expecting Masoli to see any snaps? It sort of seems like he's walking around.
Any snaps? In a perfect world, Drew Brown's taking all the snaps, and Dustin Crum
feels
is
like
taking
Masoli's
short yardage.
Sort of the
so in a perfect world,
at this point,
I'm hoping no.
Yeah.
Just because if Masoli or Adams are taking snaps, it's because
things
something
have gone horribly wrong.
Either has gone wrong injury-wise or has gone wrong performance-wise. But I hope they can get back to full health, both of them, because, hey, Adams won his start as well.
Yep.
And I think there's something there. So I just think that their quarterback room is very deep. Mm-hmm. And look, I just saw the PFF rankings that they picked every position group.
Right.
And they had Ottawa at number six. And I feel like, okay, you know what? You're at number six. You're ahead of Hamilton, Toronto, and Calgary. You probably wouldn't have been ahead of Toronto, but that's a different story altogether.
100%.
Yeah, so, but you're sixth, and I feel like, okay, and then you look at the receiver group, and they've got Ottawa third.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then you brought in a new offensive coordinator. Now, are there question marks at the running back position because Devontae Williams got hurt?
That was
sure.
Rough.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Are there question marks on the O-line? Yeah, they didn't have a great year last year. I think, but they went out and added... Dariusz Bladek in the offseason. So we'll see how that plays out. And I think there's contingency plans if right tackle doesn't go as planned in terms of Canadians there. So I do think that as a whole, the offense is going to be better. I think quarterback's going to be better. Receivers are going to be better. Hopefully the O-line is better. Offensive coordinator, I think that's the biggest thing. When you talk to people, that's maybe where the biggest change is going to be. And so I do feel like this offense, which went, quite frankly, from, I'd call it passable, but only barely passable. Like just average, maybe even below average, whatever you want to call it, but barely passable. The last 3 years, it was historically bad.
Yes.
In 2019, 2021, 2022. So we already saw some improvements from those 3 years, which were historically bad offensively, to where they were last year, where they're averaging over 20 points a game for the first time since 2018 when they got to a Grey Cup. So with additions in the quarterback room, offensive coordinator, hopefully improvements on the O-line, and certainly additions in the receiver group, this should be an offense that is better than what was last year, which was below average or barely passable or whatever you want to call it. Now, what's the defense going to look like?
Well, just before we get to the D, I want to ask you, because did you have a better handle than the rest of us after watching this team last year? We talked a lot about that offensive line, but the style Dustin Crum was playing put a lot of pressure on that line. He was holding the ball for a long time, especially early on, right, when he was thrown in there. He's a guy who wanted to run it. He was taking an extra steamboat or two before throwing it out there. Was that him taking too long and the line breaking down under pressure that any line was going to break down under? Or did he feel like he should have had that time and the line wasn't giving it to him? Like, how did you, is it possible to reconcile those two things? What did you make of it?
I think it was both.
Yeah.
I think, I think the old line did a pretty good job with the running game.
Right.
And that's what gives me hope. Now, Devontae Williams blossomed, and it's unfortunate that he's not back, because again, now it's a question mark and who's gonna basically be the guy. I mean, we know it's gonna be Reichwell Armstead to start, Kylan Hill on the practice roster.
Oh, we saw them giving snaps to Deadman, right? Like,
and that's where he could get integrated. And then there's Amilcar Polk as well as a Canadian that could replace Jackson Bennett in that role. So we'll see how it plays out, but courage based on last year that I think this group can open holes and help the running game. I don't think they're good enough in pass pro, but I also think Dustin Crum wasn't good enough. And in the sense that there were times that he was holding on to the ball too long.
He asked a lot of them, yeah.
And I go back to a conversation that I had with Brian Chu in 2016, concerned about the offensive line with the Red Blacks, because in 2015, they were all healthy.
Yeah.
And in 2016, Sir Vincent Rogers went down, and there were other injuries, and they were suffering more blows in pass protection than they were in 2015 when that group was fantastic. And I remember talking to Brian Chu, and he wasn't throwing Trevor Harris under the bus, but he said, it's a big difference with Hank in there than Trevor in there because of how quickly Hank got the ball out at that point.
Right. You're not asking me to hold off these monsters for.
All of a sudden, because I remember how concerned I was about the O-line with no Servi down the stretch. And then Hank came back and he was finally healthy that year. And he was on fire. And that's why, like, 8-9-1, and, you know, it was a big upset against Calgary. We know that.
Yeah.
But I felt pretty good about their chances because if you watch the games late that season, once Hank was back, like, they were rolling. And that offense in particular was rolling.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not like it came out of nowhere. And all of a sudden, Hank was back, and the issues that they had in the O-line were solved. And so I think it's a little column A and a little bit of column B.
Yep.
I'm sure Dustin Crum will keep progressing in that manner, but Drew Brown gets the ball out quickly.
Yeah.
That's one of the big things you notice watching him, whether it's been preseason, whether it's just watching him practice. He gets the ball out, and that's going to help the O-line, but there's still questions there. If you're talking about the offense, the biggest question mark, because running back is a question mark, but it's one guy.
Yeah.
Out of 12. The offensive line is the biggest question mark. So that's, I'm more confident in the other spots. We'll see how right tackle in particular works out. I mean, Drew Desjarlais named to the top 50. Mm-hmm. I think getting Bladeck here and you've got Ruby for depth. You've got, I think Hogan Seydal needs to take some steps, and certainly they need somebody at right tackle to take some steps. And if they do, then this offense could be a lights out.
When you look around the receiving core, they let Nate Behar step away from the team. Pretty popular guy amongst his teammates is my understanding. Pretty popular guy in this studio. He's been in to do the show before.
Great guy.
Yeah, they go out and they bring back Dominic Rhymes, who has a history in this market. What do you think of the receiving core and the moves they made this offseason?
I think they made the right moves. They needed someone who was a matchup problem, and I think they've got a couple of players that are matchup problems now. They didn't have enough players that are matchup problems. Justin Hardy's a great interior receiver. Braylon Addison, I thought he looked great in the preseason game at home, and just a real smart receiver that is going to be kind of like that Brad Sinopoli type, that comfortable blanket that, okay, that option's not open, that option's not open. Well, there we go.
My guy.
There's Braylon Addison. There's Justin Hardy.
Right.
And the problem in the last few years has been they haven't had enough matchup problems where those guys who are your kind of third and fourth options are just, all right, Rhymes isn't open. This guy's not open. Like it was, the speed guy was Chris Williams. Then it was Deontay Spencer. And, they had, Ellingson and Ernest Jackson that were bigger guys. And Brad Sinopoli was just Old Faithful.
Yeah.
But Old Faithful did a lot better when he had matchup problems. So
of course, yeah.
With Dominic Rhymes, he's a matchup problem. Now, Jalen Acklin, I think, will have a better season with Rhymes here as well. So then you got Hardy. Then you got Addison. There's four guys that had 1,000-yard years at some point in their career. But the wild card here is Khalil Pimpleton because he's 5'7", made for the CFL game, and he's a matchup problem. Blazing speed, and we've watched him in preseason. He had two great games. I don't know how they're going to find him on the field, and maybe, I think they're going to find a way, especially as the season progresses, but there's another guy who can be a burner that's a matchup problem. And now if you've got one matchup problem who's got size and one matchup problem who's got speed, now you've got some old reliables to compliment him. I think this receiving core could be a big problem for other teams in the CFL.
So I interrupted you there. You were going to take us around to the other side of the ball and start to talk about this defense. You know, they've made some moves. They've made some changes again. But ultimately, you know, there's some familiar faces still on the defensive side of the ball. Like, what are you expecting out of that group?
Well, I expect the front to be really good with Lorenzo Maldon and Bryce Carter coming off the edge. I mean, Maldon, player of the year, defensive player of the year 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And last year he was seeing a lot of double teams, so that meant Bryce Carter got the easier path.
Sure.
And he made the most of it, had a great season. And then on the interior, you know, you got Mike Wakefield, you got Cleon Lang. So, like, you're pretty strong there. Jovan Santos Knox, Frankie Griffin are back. I know they really like Davion Taylor as a linebacker, so I think they're going to be good there. It's the secondary. And when you look at the secondary, that includes the Sam linebacker. That's where they brought in Adarius Pickett from Toronto. He was the East Defensive Player of the Year last year.
It seemed like a lot of people liked that move, right, to bring in
Pickett. You know, it's certainly a big move. It's unfortunate Brandon Dandridge is hurt to start the season.
Yeah.
But he'll be opposite someone that I'm really high on in Elijah McGee at corner. I think Damon Webb solidified him as strong half. And you've got multiple Canadians, likely with a die starting, but with Justin Howell and Ty Cranston in there that can play at safety. So we'll see. I mean, to start the season, the secondary was woeful last year.
Yeah.
It was not good. It's the worst I've ever seen here in Ottawa. So that was another, along with right tackle and running back, the biggest question marks for me coming into the season. I think having McGee here from the start helps. Having Pickett here really helps, obviously. Defensive Player of the Year.
Yeah.
But there's still a couple of question marks with Dandridge hurt. Okay, Money Hunter, who didn't have a great finish to last year, is going to likely start the year at boundary half, and that's a key position. So he's going to have to be a lot better than he finished last year. And then the field half position is a bit of a question mark as well. So I think the question that I asked last year, was it personnel or was it scheme? And I'm not smart enough to realize which one it was in terms of the issue. And we're going to find out. I mean,
they
brought back the same defensive coordinator and they made the change on offense. But
yep.
Baron Miles is back as defensive coordinator. Now, last year he was defensive coordinator and he was also kind of the quote unquote defensive backs coach. They've actually brought in a defensive backs coach and Alex Suber, who was here before. He played DB. He was here before as a receivers coach, and now he's back here as DB coach. So I think that should help, having someone dedicated to that group.
Sure.
But it's still a question mark going into the season because it was woefully bad last year again. But I do think there's some real McGee. Like, I could see Elijah McGee make the move to the NFL if he had a good season. Like, he's that good. And he was so impressive late last season. So that was a nice find by them. And we'll see if they can, they don't have to be the best unit in the league, but they can't be the worst.
Right.
Like, they've got to, like, move from, okay, you're the worst pass unit in the league to be sixth.
Sure.
Be sixth in the league.
Yeah.
I'd take that. And that's how I feel about the O-line. Be the sixth best offensive line in the league. Because if you're the sixth best O-line and you're the sixth best secondary, I think the other parts of this team are good enough where they should win 8+ games.
Were you surprised that Bob Dice was brought back?
Because
fans get upset, right? Fans demand change. Fans are irrational. But that was Bob Dice's first full year on the job. It wasn't a good year. There were moments where people were upset with challenges that were made or weren't made. And yeah, we got to the end of the season and they didn't wait very long before coming out and saying, yeah, Bob Dice is going to be back. He's our guy. That didn't catch you off guard at all?
No, I think it's, unless the coach is a disaster.
Yeah.
And when I say disaster, I'm not talking about.
But you did say scheme versus talent, right? Like, that was a decision they seem to make pretty quick, right?
Well, and it's his choice,
mm-hmm.
and that's why I say, like, the coordinators are his choice, and that's part of what the job of the head coach is, to bring in really good staff.
Yep.
Because the head coach only has, I mean, he's got a big role, but in other ways, he's got a bit of a small role.
Right.
You're
handing
because
off
essentially,
a lot.
You're hiring good people that you need to hire good people in position coaches and coordinator spots. And so, like, that's a big part of what makes a coach successful
mm-hmm.
is who he's hiring.
Who are you delegating to? Yeah.
And now you've got a bit more of a big picture role. And I think, here's the thing, like, I think he's got a lot of the qualities that you need in that big picture head coach role, which is setting the culture, keeping players accountable. And
well, the team seems to want to play for him.
Yes.
Yes.
And that's where I say, like, unless it's a disaster, I'm not saying, like, I don't care what, sorry, Mike number one, if you're listening, I don't care if you think it's a disaster. Okay. And look, that's not me saying I don't care what the fans
think. I understand.
Because
yeah.
the fans should be pissed
yeah.
off.
It's 14. Fans are passionate. Fans are irrational.
It's 14 wins in 4 years. Yeah. It hasn't been good enough.
Right.
So we get that. But when I say something is dysfunctional, I've been around enough teams and I know when they have to get rid of the coach. Absolutely have to get rid of the coach.
Right.
And that's when the players don't believe. And when the players don't believe, the coach is done.
Yeah.
And sometimes, like, Paul Appelese is a real good coach
mm-hmm.
as a coordinator, and he got to a Grey Cup as a head coach.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, it didn't work out for him. And you could tell later
yeah,
on
it
in
was
his
done.
Time.
It was done.
The players weren't buying what he was selling.
Yep.
And when that happens, it's over. And that's essentially what happened with Paul Appelese here. Fair or unfair,
mm-hmm.
that's what happened. I didn't see that with Bob Dice. Now, look, there comes a point in time, and maybe it's year two, I don't know, but there comes a point in time where that's not the only thing you can judge things on, but after year one, you can't just fire a guy.
Well, you got to have some stability.
You need a lot to decide to fire a guy, and especially in the CFL where you've got the staff cap, the operations
yep.
cap.
Yeah.
You can't just go out and fire guys every year.
No.
So.
Well, and it destroys the accountability in your room. If guys just give up and don't play for a guy, well, they'll fire and bring him in. Like, you can't do it every year, right? You can't constantly be turfing out new coaches.
So the players here still believe.
Yeah.
The players outside here believe in the coach. And so does he need to be better at situational football? I think everyone does. Yeah. I mean, Rick Campbell had to learn as well in his first year. And I'm not talking about what he did in a handful of games in Saskatchewan or a handful of games in 2022. Last year was his first year as a head coach, the head coach of the football team. And there were some rough patches. I didn't think he dealt with the media. And when I say this, I'm not talking about dealing with me, because my dealings with Bob have always been great. I didn't think he handled the media as good as he needed to.
Yeah.
And I've already seen improvements
okay.
in that regard
yeah.
this year. And so there's just a comfort level that it takes time with certain things. And I think he's grown already in that regard. Does he have to grow in other areas? Absolutely.
Sure.
And does this team have to win this year? And I don't know what the total is.
Well, let me zoom out. Let's do that. Because Vegas, the last I saw, had Ottawa at five and a half
yeah.
wins.
Well, certainly more than that. Like, I don't think six wins is good enough.
It's not crazy, though, right?
In my head,
if you've got this many years of winning three games a year, it's not crazy for the betting community to go, yeah, show me. And, like, I think they're...
I'd hammer the over this year.
I would take the over as well. But I'm not, like, I'm not one of those fans who's insulted by 5.5.
I'm not one of those fans who's feeling
disrespect.
No one should be insulted.
No. You've had three wins for however many years now.
Well, 3-3-4-4.
Right.
So it's 14 wins in 4 years.
Right. So, yeah, it's 5.5. Clear it.
It's fair for them to put that number, and it's fair for people to say, show me. I don't know what an acceptable win total is. I want it, like, for me, I've got 7 in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And no one's going to be dancing in the streets with 7 yeah. wins. I'm just, like, but after 3-3-4-4, to me, we need to see kind of double that.
Yeah.
And
well, in the East, man, you laid it out already. There's some questions around the East.
Yeah, there's
right?
questions all around the CFL.
There always and Ottawa, is. But what is Toronto going to be without Chad Kelly for at least half the year?
Yeah,
Montreal, when they won the championship, they weren't a juggernaut. They didn't run.
Okay, Ottawa needs to win some games against the East, though.
Yeah.
They
That's what I'm saying.
They won four last year against the West. So that wasn't the problem last year. They need to win games against the East. They need to win games, period. They need to win seven or eight games. And again, that's not me saying seven games is, let's plan a parade. They won seven games.
But it's probably good enough for a playoff spot.
They need a serious step in the right direction where they're competitive and they're at least in the mix for a playoff spot in the last week or two in the season and not 4-12 and in the mix. Like 2 years ago, they were actually 4-12 and they still would have made the playoffs with two more wins. Like, no, they got to be at least seven or I'd be happy with eight wins. I really would. And it doesn't mean I'm going to be honking my horn down Bank Street if they win eight games or anything like that. But
eight games, I wouldn't be shocked. Eight games getting them in the playoffs this year. Like the East is weak. The East is weak.
I don't agree.
You're
with
not
you.
Buying that, eh?
No, I think
Chad Kelly, I think that's going to be an issue for Toronto. I don't know what Hamilton's going to get out of the quarterback position. I think Montreal will probably win the East, but I don't feel like they're a juggernaut that's getting ready
Montreal's
to win.
Montreal's, for me, the favorite. I don't know about Calgary in the West. I'm not as convinced as others. Like Saskatchewan and Edmonton are prove me as much as the Ottawa Redblacks are.
Right.
Like Edmonton's been real bad for three seasons, and they were last year. Saskatchewan, they've been bad for the last two seasons. So they're all in a prove me stage. And I think with Hamilton and Toronto, like I do think Montreal, BC, Winnipeg are probably your favorites, and then everyone else is kind of in the next group. And okay. So, yeah, like if you're saying like, okay, you would put money, everything on three teams to make the playoffs. It's BC, Winnipeg, and Montreal, and it's nobody else.
Yep, that's fair. Yeah, no, I would say that's fair, but I look around the rest of that East and go, there's nothing scary.
Yeah.
There's nothing scary right now.
I don't think there's anything real bad there either. Okay. Like I could see
just a mushy.
I could see four teams. I could see Montreal at like 11 wins and the other three teams somewhere between 7 and 10.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's fair. I got two more things I want to ask you about. Let's zoom out on the league. You know, you've sort of elaborated here already on this idea of, you know, there being three kind of elite top of the league teams and then a kind of a mushy middle as we've started the season. We are 1 week in, but what are you going to be looking at across the league that are interesting storylines or teams here early in the season you want to get a look at and go, I want to see how that guy looks, or I think this team might be good when people are sleeping on them. Like, what are some early storylines you've got an eye on?
Montreal.
Yeah.
I think Montreal is, I mean, they're the defending Grey Cup champs, and a lot of people want to know if they're for real or not. And I think when you look at the roster that they bring back, it's a lot of familiar faces. So Montreal is an interesting one for me. I think they're a playoff team. I think they're my pick to win the East. But right. that's probably the biggest one. And then, like, for me, beyond that, league-wide, I'm business of sports nerd.
Yeah.
And I'm curious to see, can they get that 10th team?
Hmm.
And it doesn't feel like it's imminent in Halifax and Quebec
Off
City.
Off and on in Halifax, right? Like, we got a location, we got an ownership group. No, we don't. Here's
a fascinating thing that Dave Naylor said on our radio station last week. And he was spitballing, but he said, what if the UFL folds? And I don't know how closely you follow
not very
attendances in spring football.
Yeah, no.
I look every week.
Okay.
St. Louis averages over 30,000 games. Yeah. Over 30,000
a
game.
Wow, okay.
Everyone else is under 15. And a lot of games where they're announcing under 10 and it looks like friends and family in the crowd. So what if the league folds?
The USFL.
Well, the UFL.
Yeah, sorry.
I know. It's hard to keep track.
The XFL.
Spring football's never worked.
No.
And clearly it's not working right now. So would St. Louis work in the Canadian Football League? Mm. Because two things.
Could we get another old Tannenbaum version of our anthem?
Two things about the old Canadian Football League experiment to the U.S. In some ways, it didn't work. But in some ways, it worked spectacularly because guess what? We're here in 2024, and we're still talking about the Canadian Football League. Yep. And the reason that they went to the United States in the first place was they needed the money. CBC deal was toast,
yeah,
and they needed money, and so they went to different American teams and got expansion fees from Sacramento and
Vegas, Baltimore,
San Antonio, Shreveport, Birmingham, Memphis.
God, yes,
and we're still talking about a league today.
Yeah,
so that in itself means it's successful, but Baltimore was a success.
Yep.
And there's a city that lost their NFL franchise and wanted to show that they should be in the National Football League. And so they ended up having two great years, won a Grey Cup, had over 30,000 a game, and then the Ravens came into existence because of that. Because they showed that they could be a success in the Canadian Football League. So that to me is an interesting one.
Expansion.
And I don't know if that will ever come to be. And there's a lot of issues that you would have to look at. But if you're looking for a 10th team, and maybe St. Louis ends up getting an NFL team, and then, geez, what are you back to 10? Or are you moving it to a different place? I mean, I don't know what the possibility would be after that. But that got me intrigued when Dave Naylor brought that up. So, I don't know. I'd be okay with a 10th team. I loved that period of the Canadian Football League. I found it so fascinating. And, yeah, in some ways it didn't work, but in some ways it did because I remember I probably watched, like now that I'm working in the league, I watch as many games as possible.
Sure.
But when I grew up in the 80s and 90s, other than when U.S. expansion was there, a lot of times I was watching the old Edmonton Eskimos and that was it. Like I wasn't watching, it's Winnipeg and and Montreal.
Yeah, you watch your team.
On a Saturday in 1984, I wasn't as excited to watch that as I was, you know, maybe NHL with different teams or NFL or MLB or whatever. Like I probably wasn't watching. And it was honestly the Canadian Football League expansion into the U.S. that got me watching more CFL.
Right.
I probably watched more CFL games outside of Edmonton in that era until I started covering the league myself in 2014. And now I watch a ton of it. But I really look back fondly at that time. And I would absolutely welcome a 10th team if it happened to be in the United States of America.
There you go. Let me hit you with this last then, because your pal Lever and I talked about this a week or so ago on the podcast. And the idea of whether or not the Red Blacks are starting to get squeezed just a little in the summer by the amount of sports that are moving into the market. And when the Red Blacks came back in 2014, there wasn't a whole lot going on in the summer. But the Blackjacks are here now, right? We've got Atletico here now. We've got this new Northern Super League in women's soccer that's moving in here now. And there's some things to do in the summer. There's sports to watch. And look, I don't want to beat this drum to death because we've already done that here on this show over the years. The Red Blacks games at TD Place, really fun. Like, great atmosphere, great venue, awesome place to be on a Friday night or a Saturday afternoon, whenever the game's going to be. But it feels like they're going to get squeezed here a little bit, and not in the sense that they're going to get squeezed out of the market, but you better start to perform, right? You better start to win, because it's not going to be enough to just say, well, you know, it's a fun place to watch a football game on a Friday night. We'll go down, we'll have dinner, watch the game. Maybe, you know, if you're still young and fun, unlike me, you'll go somewhere after the game and it'll be part of your Friday night. There's options now, right? There's other things to do around summer sport in this market. Is this, in your mind, a pressure point for the Red Blacks, or am I overstating the threat that they're under right now?
It's a great question. It's a topic that I've discussed numerous times.
Mm-hmm.
They have to, I honestly don't think the other stuff affects the Red Blacks. Like, now we got a lacrosse team here. Now we've got an NSL team here. Mm-hmm. Now we've got PWHL Ottawa here. I just think the Red Blacks affect the Red Blacks.
Right.
So they got to win. So, like, their crowds, they've been horrible for 4 years.
Yep.
They've won 14 games. They had a stretch. At least they won, at least of their four wins last year, three of them were at home.
Yeah,
so there
was
that.
Change. Yeah.
Because they're, for the longest time, they just couldn't win a home game.
Yep.
But they just have to win.
Right.
So, like, all those other teams could disappear, and it's not going to change the fact that a team that's won 14 games in four seasons needs to start winning. Mm-hmm. Because all of a sudden, if all those other teams disappeared,
I'm still not going to go if you saw.
It's not going to be 25,000 if they're winning 3-4 games a year.
Right.
So I don't think – I do think there's – the competition is going to squeeze somebody out.
Right.
That's what I worry about. I hope not. I do think it's probably going to squeeze somebody out, but I don't think – I think they're 18,000. I hope that's where they bottom out at, because I hope that they get 7-8 wins and then 9 or 10 and get into Grey Cups again. And that
momentum,
and
yeah.
It's such an awesome place to see a game.
It is.
It's such an awesome experience, especially when they're winning.
But that's only going to be enough for so long, right? I got to see a win at some point, right? Like, I
well, no, and that's why I say 3-4 wins, irregardless. I don't even think that's a word.
It's not.
It's just regardless.
We all love it, though.
Three,
we throw it down now and then.
3 or 4 wins isn't going to cut it, no matter if there's 48 other teams in Ottawa or two.
Right.
They got to start winning games.
Yeah.
So I think there's so much staying power. There's, you look at how many people wear Red Blacks gear. You look at, like, last year when they were getting 19, 20,000, they were selling out of the tickets from like $50 and under.
Yep.
So it's still, like, the casual tickets are selling. The hardcores are pissed.
That's
where they've lost. Like, when they're getting 18,000 and you're wondering, okay, where are those 6,000 or 7,000 people? It's not the 25-year-olds who are deciding I'm not showing up on a Friday night.
Right.
It's the hardcores that are pissed, and rightfully so, that this team has been terrible for four seasons. So I think they'll get them back. They just have to win. They have to show that they're competitive. And I do, like, when I look at Sean Burke, mm-hmm. and I look at the job that he has done, like, I don't see dysfunction. I see someone that hired an assistant GM or whatever his title is. I don't know. Brendan Tamman, who's been a GM in the league. He's won a Grey Cup as a general manager.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like he's hiring somebody that
An
he's worried that he's
buddy.
Worried about that person's going to steal my job. No, he's hiring the best people. He's trying to run things properly, and it just hasn't worked so far. It hasn't helped that quarterbacks have gone down. Hopefully, with the guys they have right now, that's not going to be an issue. And hopefully, their best guys stay healthy and they win some games this year, and it starts to build from there and starts to build up some buzz. But in terms of the rest of it, do I foresee some other teams potentially struggling? I mean, they're going to have to, you're going to have to be good. You're going to have to be competitive, and we'll see how it plays out. I'm encouraged. So the Hockey should be fine. The Senators are the only big four team. I mean, MLS, I guess, can kind of say in terms of, like, they've got franchises worth like $500 million to a billion. So, but the ones that we grew up with, right? NHL,
so NBA, NFL.
Yeah. So we've got the Sens, and then the CFL is kind of in a class of its own. So we got the Red Blacks.
Yep.
PWHL's got the most buzz.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like financially they've got some staying power. And
that seems stable.
So you got PWHL, you got a history with the 67s.
Yep.
And then everyone else, like, to me, that's where the everyone else starts. Okay.
And Black Bears, your Blackjacks.
Black Bears, Blackjacks, Atletico Ottawa.
Yeah, NSL now.
Women's soccer. Yeah. That's where the battle is going to be. And we'll see how it plays out. I mean, that's where you have to win. Because Atletico Ottawa, great start. Mm-hmm. Top of the league, fantastic. You know, I think for the rest of the season, what we've seen in 2015 and 2022 is when the team is good, the city's going to get behind it. And once you get late spring, summer, and end of the fall, those teams are going to get 5,000, 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 for games. Right. And that's what we're going to see the rest of the year for Atletico Ottawa. But if they're bad,
tails off fast.
That's I think that's where those other sports.
Yeah.
Did I mention the Titans?
Right.
So yeah. Got
baseball in town too. Yeah.
You've got Titans, Black Bears, Blackjacks, Atletico Ottawa.
Plus, it's just summer. You just go NSL. Hang out at the pool or hang out at the boat. Like, there's things to do. Like, well, it's a tough market.
There is something to be said about going Titans, Atletico Ottawa, Northern Super League because it's outdoors on a beautiful night.
That's right.
There's no other. Like, for me, that's where it's like, okay, it's difficult. I think it's probably a little more difficult for the Blackjacks because they're in the middle indoors of the summer and it's like 28 above.
Yeah.
So, but we're seeing positive momentum in some of these other markets. Winnipeg, Calgary, getting crowds of over 10,000. Basketball's rising. It feels like Ottawa, feels like that's a franchise that needs an owner. Mike Morreale has talked about that. He says we're looking for local ownership for the Ottawa Blackjacks. Feel like if they get an owner and he can do some good things, then, you know, maybe they're getting crowds of similar to what you're getting, like 6,000, 7,000 at TD Place. But I think they do need ownership, and we'll see how some of these other groups do. But yeah, there's a lot of competition for sporting dollar. I do see, like, you go to the PWHL games, and there's some familiar faces.
Sure.
But it's a different crowd as well. There's a lot of women going, which is awesome. And that's, for me, that's what you need. I'm going to come to the games, but I'm going to go to all these games and all these different sports. You need
the sound people of a PW. Like, I've been to a couple of them too. Oh. There's people bringing kids. Like, it's a different roar when they
there's
score.
There's a buzz.
Right?
There's a buzz in
there. It's fun. It's a fun vibe.
But it's a different crowd. And there's a lot of women 100%. There. And that's the thing. I'm going to support it.
Yeah.
But women's sports, you need women to champion the cause. And I do think this city, whether it's Women's World Cup that we saw here that was successfully supported, whether it's PWHL Ottawa.
Women's Hockey Championships have been here.
We'll see how this NSL does.
Yep.
You know, they've got a lot of work to do.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no guarantee that the Janine Beckys are going to be playing here right off the bat. Right. So we'll see how it all plays out. I mean, I feel like it's going to be tough for one or two of these franchises, but I do think, like, the Red Blacks are here to stay.
Yeah.
And so, again, they're at a different level.
But there are people now nipping at their heels. That's all I'm saying.
I don't think they're nipping at the Red Blacks' heels. I think the Red Blacks have to get
so many entertainment dollars to go around.
They have to get their stuff in order. And when they get, again, when they get their stuff in order,
they'll
be fine. But they have to get their stuff in order. And whether there's 48 teams in Ottawa or two, the crowds aren't going to be more than 18,000 until they start winning on a regular basis. Simple.
Fair enough. Look, we, as is often the case, covered more in episode one than I thought we would. There was a lot to talk about. AJ's travels for the Olympics, for Copa America, all kinds of things going on. We didn't even get to the Red Blacks. We had to ask him to come back in, do a second show for us. You've been kind enough to do it, man. Thanks for coming back.
Anytime, Matt. Always a pleasure. Get rid of that shirt and hat.
Thank you for doing it. Thank you to the good listener for checking it out. Hope you all enjoyed that. Lever Sage returns on Thursday for his usual slot here on Tall Can Audio. I bet we'll talk a little about Cody Ceci after our exchange last week and what's happened with him since. I got some things to say to Lever about that. I'm hoping he's got some things to say to me. Maybe, and I'm sorry. I know you know better than anybody, AJ, but that doesn't seem overly likely. But that will be Lever Sage on Thursday, so stick around for that. Thank you so much for listening. Enjoy week one for the Ottawa Red Blacks as they have their home opener here on Thursday evening. And we will talk to you all on the next one.
That's it. I cannot work under these conditions. If anybody wants me, I'll be downstairs at McDougal. Call the weekend guy. I don't care.